All right, here we go. Welcome to the Linux Link Tech Show, episode 84.
Moving right along.
Is it 84? I thought it was 85.
It's 84.
84.
Okay, I'm like way off. Sorry.
Yeah, last week I did the intro, so that's an odd week. So it has to be 83. 84. Today's 84.
Yes, 84.
84. Monumental 84th episode.
Getting close to 100.
As we still work through our audio issues.
Hopefully we'll be sounding a little bit better today.
That's right.
That's what I'm hoping.
Hopefully.
I'm hoping too. So if you listened prior to, just before we started the intro, you heard us testing out some audio stuff. Because we really do want to get the audio right for you guys. We don't like... And the tough thing is, with the audio, is getting everything volume up perfectly. And then we were finding problems with the Skype, particularly Skype out to a telephone. It's Skype to Skype sounds pretty good. And when we do Skype out, the incoming audio sounds fine. That we record sounds pretty good. But the outgoing, when it actually reaches a person listening through the telephone, like Pat had said, it sounds like you're listening.
Talking through a pillow.
Yes, sounds like you're talking through a pillow. And even if we adjust the volumes or do whatever, it doesn't change the fact that it's still a little difficult to
hear. I just came up with another idea, but I'm not. It's a little too late to try it now, of course. But
share with the rest of the world?
I'm going to try a different output over there.
Different output?
Yeah.
But see, I don't know if it's the output. I mean, we would have to actually call Skype out to Skype out and see if there's a difference. But I think it's a Skype issue.
I think it is a Skype issue.
But we'll definitely try whatever you want to try next time.
Doesn't hurt. And
let's just stop the show now and do it.
It can't get any worse than what we sound now.
That's
so
not true.
I mean, I know people have complained, particularly with the Skype interview stuff, that... we did get a comment from Ack on the blog. He said it's really annoying when the person who we're interviewing has to ask us exactly what we said because they can't hear us, and we're really trying to work on it. And I want to point something out that I don't know if you've never used Skype over a phone before. It's really a lot different than what you're used to listening to doing a Skype to Skype call or a regular telephone-to-telephone call, because you can't all talk at once like on a normal phone.
Right.
Like Pat could be talking at the same time I can be talking.
No, this is only... Right now we're running half duplex on this stuff. I don't think we can really go the full duplex that a normal phone is.
Right.
Until we can figure out why.
Well, we I don't know if Skype will do a full duplex, will it?
I don't think it will.
Because I haven't talked to enough people on Skype to really figure that one out.
Right. If we start talking, and that's another thing that was pointed out is why do we have pauses? You know, it seems like some pauses.
Latency, that's why.
Well, it's not just latency, but one of the other issues with a pause is, you know, we don't know when a guest is going to finish whatever
you don't
want to
talk over them like I'm doing
right
now.
Right. But if you start to talk over them, it's going to cut off their audio. And
there'll be a dropout.
It'll be a dropout. So you end up having a situation where you pause just long enough that you think they're finished, and they don't know if they should say any more, and you both start talking at once, and it sounds weird. Plus another thing with the pauses, too, this is a live show, all right? And you listen to a lot of other shows.
And we have a lot of pauses, period.
Right. Well, if you listen to a lot of other shows that do pre-recorded shows, a lot of shows...
They edit out
all that pausing. So that's just something to be aware of. When you listen to a show and it's like, wow, man, that sounded... How you know, and I've often said that to myself. How come, you know, when I listen to myself on a show, I don't sound as smooth as somebody else? You know, when you listen to, like, something on an interview on... You pick it, whatever show. And that's because they actually do a lot of post-production.
The Screensaver guys, I've been listening to that podcast, and it's really good. It's the guys who used to be on the Screensavers. And Leo's talking about what they're going to do is they're going to record locally. They're going to do the Skype call, same way they do it now, but they're going to record locally and then send the individual files, you know, everybody one at a time, and then he's going to edit it together so they get a better quality recording. And
there was a bunch of... podcasts that were doing the same type of thing on it. You know, each recording their own side of the conversation.
And as long as
you have like a countdown in the beginning where you can sync everybody up on it, you can just blend it back together, you know, post-editing.
It's a lot of work, though.
Yeah, and we do absolutely zero post-editing.
We don't want to do any extra work.
Well, the problem is we're live, and most people aren't live.
Right. So I mean, if we wanted to, we could go and take the show afterwards and go through it and edit.
Clean it
out.
That would be no fun.
That would take a long time.
Man. That's very tedious.
The only other route that we have to go down if we're not going to use Skype is we talked about other possibilities. We're going to stay with voice over IP. We're going to have to throw money at it. I mean, a lot more money. It's going to have to be a hardware solution. We're going to have to figure out how we're going to be able to record that hardware solution and bring it back in.
One of the things we're looking at maybe is an Asterisk server, setting up a separate server that'll handle just phone stuff. And it would involve getting a telephony card, and setting up the software for it. I mean, it's doable. It's just a question of how much we want to spend. The other thing that's involved in that, there's a monthly fee with that. And since that's going over the bandwidth, you're eating up your bandwidth. So that might cut down, you know, how much you can push out.
Right, so...
You know, we just got to take all things into consideration and weigh our options. And
I mean, we're trying, yeah. The other thing was to use a regular phone and do the hybrid thing that we tried doing for a while.
Yeah, we'll have to figure that out. Yeah, we'll have to figure that one out again, because that actually may work as well.
It might.
I did find another adapter to give a try. But again, it's one of those things I got to come up with some money first before I can get it.
Well, but the flip side to that is then that's going to cost a whole lot more.
Yeah,
you know,
it's your long distance.
It's long distance we're being charged for. It's not 1 to 2 cents a minute like we can with Skype out.
With an Asterisk server, it'll probably run between $15 to $30, depending on what level of service we get, if we go that route, besides the hardware and the setup time. But it might be something long-term that we should probably do.
Yep, money.
Yeah, it's money. You know.
Money. What time are we supposed to call this guy at?
I told him between a quarter of and nine.
What time is it? Oh, we got plenty of time.
We got a few
quarter
minutes.
Of before we start.
We got a couple minutes.
Ding-a-ling-a-ling. That first episode of LQ Radio was out this week.
Speaking of Skype, they had some audio issues with Skype.
I thought it was a great, fantastic first show, and I really look forward to listening to it. And I know, you know, again, they did have some audio issues.
Yeah.
That the one guy was really, you know, hard to hear. And
you couldn't hear them very well.
It was hard, but, I mean, it was still, I really enjoyed it very much. It did an excellent job. I look forward to every, you know, the next coming show. It was worth the wait for 2 months, whatever it was.
Did you hear the episode that he released today? I don't think it was.
I listened to part of it. I was
going
to get to that. The interview with the two of the editors from...
Linux World?
Yes, SysCon and Linux World. And they're
they all resigned
for leaving due to the the whole Marine
O'Gara fallout.
Yeah, O'Gara issues. But yeah, definitely go over to linuxquestions.org and check out LQ Radio. The first episode of Linux Questions, LQ Radio is out, and then his interview, fantastic stuff. I'm sure it'll get through the audio issues, just like we're getting through the audio issues. It's a learning process. It makes me cry.
Little tweak, little tweak here, little tweak there.
Yeah, here we could.
Can I find that?
Huh? That's here's cheap. Here's some stuff we recorded before the show. Yeah,
Dan farting and me sneezing.
And I'm stuck in the middle of it too.
There, huh? That's gonna turn off everybody. We'll get hate mail for that.
We're not a family program.
You know, I thought the interview was pretty good, but you could have done without the
fart
farting
noise.
Did you see the guys from Lung Radio? They had a thing on Slashdot, and I saw Dan posted some stuff on there and talking about the different podcasts and Linux related shows. And this one guy replied to Dan saying, "I like your show, but I hear animals in the background."
No, that was Lug. I thought that was he was talking about Lug. Oh,
that was Lug a long time ago.
What?
That was Lug. One of the questions they had on Lug Radio when they first started with
Slug
the animals.
Radio.
Right. I think they were talking about Slug Radio used to have a dog barking all the time in the background. That was funny, but
none of us could ever understand them.
Yeah, there was. Something was brought up on Slashdot, the comment about Lug Radio and how the guy said that he didn't really think that they were that great, and that then he went on to say, well, didn't they have financial problems or something?
He got the show confused with the Linux show.
With the Linux show.
I don't know how you can, guy from Chicago, guys in England. Yeah, they sound just the same, right? Whatever.
I guess a lot of people might not be aware of the Linux radio shows that are out there now, and just about everybody in the Linux community heard of the Linux show when it was going in its heyday.
Well, they were going for a while. Six, 7 years or something like that.
Yeah, they got the word spread. And so whatever. What the hell?
Speaking of which, we haven't heard anything from them.
Well,
really.
Maybe they're a little late.
That's a good thing.
Just like LQ Radio was a little late there getting off the ground. You never. It costs money.
Hey, it's time.
Everybody's got stuff to do.
It's work.
Happy day. What else is new? Alan, you weren't here last week. Maybe you might want to add some stuff before we head into our interview today with Daniel Guermier, CEO and founder of Metadot Corporation and a portal service.
Not a whole lot. I've actually been playing around with Myth at home, on it, which wasn't too hard to install on Slack.
Oh, you did
with
it Slack?
With the exception of I cannot get the frickin' volume control to work right. it works fine as long as I'm logged in on it, but as soon as I tell it to go record something at like 3 o'clock in the morning, it records perfectly. It just has no sound.
There are packages out there now for Slack, right?
No, actually, yeah. I took it all myself. I downloaded the tar file. Most everything that I needed was there. Like, I haven't gotten really far into it because I want to get the sound fixed first.
What kind of video card are you using?
It's just an old hopping TV to go ones. So it's it's just a TV card, so it's doing all the processing itself. But I've got enough horsepower now to be able to do that.
Yeah, you got a new box, so you can handle that. That's cool. Let me know if you have any problems. I'll help you out.
Yeah, it's just once I get the volume portion of it fixed, because that sort of sucks right now.
Yeah.
And then I got to get a wire downstairs to the basement living room because I want to use the hacked Xbox
front end. What are you doing? Cable?
Probably yeah. It's just a matter of I don't feel like going up into the attic to drop a cable down through the floor and through the walls and shit.
I could do wireless.
Really? Yeah, the problem is I don't have G. All my wireless is B.
You got to do G.
Although I did pick up that game card thing, that wireless G one from Linksys. And what a fucking pain in the ass.
Whoa, come on.
I'm sorry. That was a pain in the ass.
Why aren't they pain in the asses, those wireless cards?
Linksys must learn how to actually put documentation together that actually works. Because they're like, I even went as far as had to boot up Windows to use their disk to try to get this thing to work on it. And, it's really nice because they tell you, just plug it into your computer and drop the disk in. They forget to tell you that unless your computer remembers it's on the same subnet as the Linksys box on it, it ain't ever going to find it. So that took a while for me to figure that one out, and I finally came across somebody on the web who had the same problem.
Yeah, at least that's a good thing. Somebody else has the same problem as you.
Yeah, I think it works now, although I haven't had a chance to try it. I only got it up and running last night, so.
It's a cool application.
Yeah. Yeah, it should be really good. Since my TiVo is slowly dying.
And I'm looking over your shoulder, and I see you're eyeing an Alesis compressor.
Yes, yes.
Oh, we might get a compressor.
At the advice of Ranger Wes. Ranger Wes, yeah.
Alesis is good stuff. I used to use some of that outboard gear when I was in the band.
Yeah, musicians buy, $99.
Yeah, it's not bad.
So, we may be looking into that, although it's not going to happen this month.
Money, 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 more money.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It ain't going to happen this month just because of that, so.
Well, today is the eve of the release of Episode 3, and everybody's hepped up for that.
You're going to go wait online after we're done here?
No, I already got my tickets. Didn't you see the Fandango purchase right over there? Yeah, I'm going tomorrow morning. 12 noon. So I'll be going.
Blowing off work?
I took a personal day.
he's taking a really long lunch.
Yeah, I'm sick.
But, you know, there's a lot of comments about how much businesses or, you know, companies are going to lose with people taking off.
Oh, that's all bullshit, too.
Episode 3, but, you know. But what I want to add, I mean, everybody's hepped up to see Episode 3, and everybody's excited. I read a really interesting review of Episode 3 from Anthony Lane of The New Yorker. I found this through Ian Murdoch's blog. It was a link on there. An interesting thing that he had a comment about Episode 3 and the hype about it. And this is quoting from his blog. And I'm going to post the tiny URL link in the chat room right now. He says, "The general opinion of Revenge of the Sith seems to be that it marks a distinct improvement on the last two episodes, The Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones. True, but only in the same way that dying from natural causes is preferable to crucifixion." Of course, you can tell from just that portion of his review that I read that he does not give Phantom Menace a favorable review.
Even if it sucks, you gotta go see it.
Right. I mean,
I've seen all of them in the theater, so, you know, even if it sucks, I'll still go see it.
Yeah.
And that's what my wife and I said coming out of Phantom Menace was, man, that sucks.
That sucks.
We're gonna go see the next one.
The second
one
sucked too.
Yeah, we said Attack of the Clones, man.
The only good thing about Attack of the Clones was the battle scene at the end was like watching a video game, basically.
Right.
But it was okay.
It's like, you know, that kind of really sucked.
It sucked.
It can't be any, you know, you can't have any lower hopes for Phantom Menace. You could have higher hopes, but I mean, not Phantom Menace. What is it? Revenge of the Sith. You can hope as much as you want. You can go in there, but you're going in with low expectations.
Does Jar Jar finally catch one in between the eyes?
I don't know. But I'll give something away. Anakin Skywalker becomes Darth Vader at the end of the movie.
Really?
Yes, he does.
Dude, man, you ruined it.
I know. I'm sorry if I ruined that for some people. And C-3PO, R2-D2, Obi-Wan Kenobi, and Yoda, and Chewbacca all live.
What about Chewbacca's dad?
I don't know.
We haven't got to the movie yet.
I'm not going to tell you how that one is, though. They all live. But his review was pretty interesting. I mean, really something to think about. When you watch the movies, you don't really realize exactly the aesthetic value of it. And it's just, it's really, really interesting. Read that review. But go see Star Wars Revenge of the Sith anyway, because it's going to be a big movie.
I did go see Hitchhikers over the weekend, too.
Did you like it?
I did. You know, it's like I said, I haven't read the book in about 10 years, so I mean, it was good. I laughed during it. It was a nice waste of a Sunday afternoon.
Uh-huh.
I'll wait for the
$20 for popcorn, but, you know.
They'll wait for it to come out on HBO so you could just myth it.
I'll get the DVD.
Is that a word now? Myth it? Instead of TiVo, I'm going to TiVo. Would you say
that? No, it's always going to be I'm going to TiVo that.
But they started suing people for saying that now.
Really?
Because companies that, I guess you can only sue a company, but they were trying to sue companies like, and I don't know why another company would say TiVo it if they're not talking about a TiVo.
About a TiVo, yeah.
Right. But
it's like a Xerox. Yeah, I'm going to Xerox this.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it became generic.
Well, you know what? My mom would always say, I'm going to go get a mimeograph. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about?
Those were always great
to
smell.
Take and get a mimeograph, a photocopy. She wouldn't call it a photocopy. She wouldn't call it Xerox. She'd say, I'm going to get a mimeograph. I'm like,
the purple
whatever.
Ink.
Whatever.
Mm,
whatever.
The smell.
Alrighty, we're going to call our guest.
Are we going to call him right now?
What the hell?
I was just getting everything ready. Unless Pat has some... We got more to talk about. I didn't even know it was right. Wait.
Is that, like, really hurting your...
Hello? Hello?
That's Dave Ashmore. Dave, why are you calling us?
I don't know. How are you? Why did you call me?
Oh, I called you prior to the show because you had left. There was a little thing that said that you had tried to call us on a different day. So I just figured I'd, you know, return the favor.
We're not on live, are we?
Yeah, actually we are.
You're always on live.
Hello, world.
How you doing? So that
all right.
There was no reason. I was just returning your call from, I guess it was last week.
Maybe sometimes. We sound fine.
That's good.
You sound great.
Maybe sometime we can come on and talk about Myth TV a little bit.
Sounds like a plan.
Definitely. We would love that. Well, we'll schedule. I'll have Pat schedule something with you, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Sorry to interrupt you guys.
Hey, no problem. It's always great to talk to you.
Bye, Dave.
Talk to you a little bit.
All right.
Bye.
Good night.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dave, yeah. Can I smack you now or later?
What?
Can I smack you upside the head?
I was sitting here thinking that you actually initiated that call.
No, I didn't.
I'm like, I just typed in a phone number, and all of a sudden it started ringing. Pat must have hit the button. All right.
There we go.
here we go. We are calling.
I'm going to tell you, everyone's complaining about the phone ringing.
Yeah, but the phone doesn't ring that loud. Okay. When you're calling out.
All right, it's back where it was then.
Hello,
Daniel.
Yes.
How you doing tonight? This is Dan from the Linux Link Tech Show.
I'm doing good, thank you.
And this is Daniel. How do you pronounce your last name so I get it right?
My name is Germer, Daniel Germer.
Germer.
All right.
Yes, Germer.
Okay, from Metadot Corporation and Portal.
Absolutely.
All right. Daniel, I was looking over your company's website and everything, getting some information on it. Why don't you tell our listeners exactly what Metadot Portal Server is and what your company does?
Absolutely. So the Metadot Portal Server is a software that is open source that is built on the LAMP technology stack, Linux, Apache, MySQL, and Perl. That allows anybody who is not technical, so anybody who knows how to use a mouse, can build a powerful website using the Metadot software. So the software has been available for 5 years now. It's used by leading customers like U.S. Navy, NASA, many banks, and also many smaller companies. So we do provide the software for free, but we also provide, you know, technical support and services for a fee. So that's the way we make money as a business. So the the feature of Metadot as a software is that you can create a website with pages and also drop components in the page like calendars, online discussions. You can share files using the Metadot software. And it's all, you know, the interface is web-based. So you log into the website, you add your components, you click save, and it's all online. So that's, the two-minute presentation of Metadot. The main differentiator with all the other software available today is the ease of use. Once you see a Metadot website, you know how to log in, you know how to manage the content and the components of a site.
Now, I was over looking at not only about the corporation and the software itself, but looking at the companies that are actually using it. And, I mean, it looks very impressive. I mean, when you look at an end product and then you go back and you look at the videos that you have on your website for setting it up and just the tutorials on how to do things in there, I mean, it is very, very impressive and looks easy to use. And the pages that it creates are spectacular. They're beautiful.
Yes, thank you. We have been quite successful with that product, and because we really noticed that, you know, power, you know, the power of the features is what people need. but they cannot really use something that is too powerful because it becomes too complex. So all the work was not in creating more powerful features, but it was actually creating features that were as powerful, but with the ease of use that a 10-year-old could use, could understand. And the engineering actually effort is there.
Now, this packages all sorts of stuff together: a calendar, discussion forums, and an actual website design utility, and it just runs on a basic LAMP setup. Now, it has email notifications and email features. Do you include anything to manage email inside of MetaDot, or is that considered a separate application?
So we do provide, MetaDot is an all-in-one application. There is a lot of little functionalities, like you mentioned, web forums and calendars and, table management, catalog management, and all that. We call them gizmos. Like Plumtree, name them gadgets, SharePoint, web parts, and we call them gizmos. So these gizmos are, self-sufficient. You don't need to get anything else than the MetaDot application. The way people use MetaDot, is that they like the fact that it's an all-in-one application. It does 95% of all corporations need today. And they are also able to integrate it into their infrastructure via an integration using LDAP or Active Directory. So people can authenticate against the corporate directory, and then they will be logged in MetaDot.
So companies could essentially... Sorry.
Go ahead.
Companies could essentially use MetaDot as a groupware-type application?
Yes, that's the main purpose of MetaDot is to combine collaboration and content management. Because the website today, a web server will generate static pages. But what people need is the capability to communicate. To communicate, you need to be able to write, and that's content management. And you need also to be able to get answers back. And then, when you get answers back, it starts to be collaboration. So we bundle all the features together, and people use that for their intranet inside corporations, or they set up extranets so they can collaborate with customers or partners. And many other organizations actually use MetaDot for community websites. The largest community using MetaDot is the Society of Petroleum Engineers. They are located in Dallas, and they have 80,000 active members connected to MetaDot to exchange online messages, but also to exchange papers on scientific issues and do surveys, and they collaborate online using the MetaDot tool. So you can see MetaDot as the next generation website software. I think many people like to go beyond the static HTML website that they have today. They need more collaboration, more interaction with other people.
Right. Now, MetaDot, you released in April of 2000. When did you actually start developing MetaDot? How long prior to April 2000 were you in the developmental process with that?
Well, the development started in the summer of 99, when my wife, I'm French. My wife is German, and I live in Texas. So mm-hmm. Every year she goes to Germany and France for the summer. I was left alone in Texas, to go to my day job. And during the weekend and the nights, I said, why don't I try to build a software that allows people to create websites that are, quite powerful. I was, at that time, an IT manager in a large company called Schlumberger. Schlumberger is the competitor to Halliburton. It's an oil field company. So I started in 99, and in this summer, and I just could not stop programming. I got some sort of you know, a virus of programming. I just could not stop, and I spent almost a year doing all my free time, evenings, weekends, vacation, and Christmas time, just programming, until I had the first version. We released it on SourceForge in 2000, in April, and within 30 days it became one of the top 10 downloads on SourceForge. And this is where I decided, well, I was right in the need, you know, people really liked that kind of tool, so why don't I quit my day job and create the corporation around the software to support the Metadot users. That's the way it got started.
So when did you actually create Metadot Corporation then? How soon after the official release in April 2000 was Corporation established?
I created the corporation probably a month before I released the software.
Okay.
I created the corporation to make sure that from an intellectual property standpoint, things were clear where that property belonged to. Because as I was still working for another corporation, I wanted to make sure that, you know, there is no discussion on who owns the intellectual property and who doesn't.
Ah, so that was a pretty smart move then.
Yes, it was.
Did you have any problems with the company that you were working with at the time and with this release of the software that you had to deal with?
Absolutely not. Actually, they became a big supporter of Metadot. I released the software in April, then I told them that I'm going to quit the company, and they asked me what I plan to do, and at that point I just told them, you know, I'm going to sell support and custom development so people can rely on us as a company and on the Metadot software. And they asked me to do some demonstrations, and they liked very much the software, and it was very useful to them. And they asked me to do more and more presentations, and I ended up in the Schlumberger headquarters in New York. Schlumberger, just so you have an idea of the size of the company, Schlumberger has 60,000 employees. It's a $12 billion company. So I ended up in the Schlumberger headquarters to show my product and discuss my business plan, which was, you know, as thin as it could be. It was probably like a 10-slide business plan with the, you know, lots of dreams in it. And they said, you know, we like the software, we need the software, we believe in the open source model, and we want to help you, Daniel. So we want to become a customer, we want to help you, we give you offices in our campus in Austin. And that's the way it got really started. That was my first customer.
Wow, that's nice.
Yeah, that helped me get started a lot faster than I anticipated.
So now, besides yourself, how many other employees work at Metadot?
We are 6 full-time people. We were up to 25 people just before the dot-com implosion.
Uh-huh.
And so at that time, we were very busy working for large, very large customers. And when the dot-com bubble exploded, everybody stopped buying services that, you know, software and IT was the enemy. And so we decided to get rid of everything we could in terms of cost and focus really on keeping the key people who knew the technology the best. So we could maintain our current customers. So that's what we did. And it took a long time, actually, for the IT economy to recover, and especially for open source to pick up to be a major trend in software. And now, in 2005, you know, large businesses and many businesses, not only the large ones, but many businesses believe in the open source model. They know that open source software is a solid software, that it works. And we have had so many different, you know, high-profile customers that when our prospects look at that, they say, you know, they have NASA, they have U.S. Navy, they have banks, and they have so many different good references. It's probably because it works. So, and we get more and more, you know, traction on that.
Now, those six employees you have are all developers. Am I correct?
We have four people are focusing on development, and one salesperson who is going to pick up the phone when somebody calls and, you know, explain what services we have. And we have also one office manager that will do a lot of things, including invoicing and office management. So pretty small operation. We see a lot of demand now. The demand is really increasing. For example, we on Google, you know, we get all our leads from Google, and the number of demands just doubled over the last 4 months for open source solutions.
All right. Now, you release the portal under GPL. It means anybody can download it. You make your company makes its revenue on providing services, training, customization, and we hear, you know, particularly when you first start getting into the open source GPL models of business, you hear a lot that that's where you make the money, not on the software but on the support of the software. And I guess obviously that has paid off for Metadot, that model.
Yes, the supporting, you know, the selling support can be either a headache if you don't know, you know, how to scale it well. But if you know how to scale support well, it's actually as scalable as a product. It's a service that scales as well as a product, because we just do the support the same way all the time, because it's the same software. And so we know how to support our product inside out. We are very efficient at it. And we are able to sustain ourselves just by providing support to our customers. We have been profitable for a number of years. We don't have, you know, any VC money to help us every month. So we want to make sure that we provide high quality service and that people are happy with it, so they come back and stay with us. So that is a very good support, business model for an open source company. You have the larger company like Red Hat or JBoss, who is going to sell at, you know, targeting Fortune 500 very large companies. And our sweet spot is not these big, large companies, even though we do have some customers in that space. We focus on the smaller companies and, you know, companies between 100 employees up to 3,000 employees. That's the sweet spot. Selling to those guys is very hard, actually. You cannot sell too expensive, and you need to not to be too cheap either, otherwise you don't make money. So I think we have right now the right price point. We provide the right value in terms of service, and people seem to be happy, and they come back to ask more of it.
One thing, question, because it's GPL software, do you get... do you have support from the community coming into you? Like, do people out there play around with it, actually use it, and then, you know, make changes and roll them back to you? Has that, have you seen that happening?
Yes, we have quite a bit of contributions. We do get lots of bug fixes and security improvements that we roll back into the software. We do not get a lot of contributions from the little things, like, you know, the templates for look and feel, for example. Where the biggest contribution comes from corporations asking us, they actually ask us to create new features, and they pay us to do that. And then they say specifically that the new features must be GPL and put back into the code so everybody can enjoy it. 95% of the code has been developed like that, by corporations contributing to the software that way. Lots of security fixes and bug fixes also coming back to us.
All right. You know, I'm just looking through the on the website. What catches my attention and what I really notice when looking through the different companies that are actually using this. What I find interesting is each of these websites that I go to has almost a completely unique look in some respects. Like, some of them look a little similar. Some of them look completely different from the other ones, which usually when you look at a portal software, you see, you know, a standard just portal getup, and it all looks the same. And if you go to another person that's running it, they just have maybe a few different colors, a few different graphics, but it looks the same. The websites that I'm actually seeing that you showcase off of your page, a lot of them actually look completely unique and different from one another. I think that's pretty impressive.
Yes, thank you. The way people are able to do that is because we separated the presentation layer from the logistics, which is the code. So there is, like in other open source software, you know, there is the concept of skin, and our skin system is extremely powerful. You can really invent any look and feel you want with the components you want in the skin. A component being, you know, a file upload or a calendar or a discussion forum. The creativity of the web designers dictate, you know, how the site looks like, as opposed to the software dictating to the site designers what they can do and cannot. So we use a template system with, you know, cascading style sheets. It's all with the latest web standards. So designers, they are free to do whatever they like.
Yeah, that is impressive. Now, you built this, like you said, on a LAMP environment. Now, that includes running on Linux with Apache, MySQL, and Perl. Now, would that be Apache with mod Perl, or is it not required to be running mod Perl on Apache for this to work?
Mod Perl will bring speed to Metadot. You know, Perl applications can be extremely slow when they become big, unless you have Mod Perl enabled in Apache. So Mod Perl, even though it works without Mod Perl, it's not scalable. You need Mod Perl for scalability.
Okay. Now, you developed this. What distribution of Linux were you using when you developed this, and what distribution do you currently use, if they're not the same, for development purposes?
We started to Metadot. Most of the people at Metadot work on SUSE in the past. We try obviously different distributions, but the one people liked in the past was SUSE, and the one people like today is Debian. Debian has replaced all the development stations we have. The consultant working with us, you know, actually we are 6 employees, but we have many consultants working for us as well, use Debian. And more large corporations, and especially in Europe, just say that Debian is a standard in their data center, and you know, that also dictates to us what we should use. But from a developer standpoint, we prefer Debian.
All right. Now, you said you get most of your business from Google, is what you said, people looking on for this on Google or similar type of software. So you actually have customers looking for you. You don't have to go out and seek customers, is what you're saying.
Yes, we have the chance to be number 3 on Google when you look for portal server. If you look for those two words, at Portal Server, you will find first Microsoft with SharePoint. Number 2 will be Sun Microsystem with their HyperNet server. Number 3 will be Metadot. Number 4 will be IBM. Number 5 will be Jiha, which is a Java Portal Server. And every year we go up one notch. So sometimes we are number 2, not most of the time, but sometimes we go up number 2. Microsoft always stays number 1. But that's, the trend is interesting. I think us being among the big guys, it's obviously very good for us in terms of lead generation. But also, I think it's a good hint of what's becoming, you know, how open source becomes mainstream in businesses because people use open source. They link back to us. They say, we use Metadot. You know, it's great. And Google picks that up, and then we move up along the their ranking, and then we are on the top now on their page.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say that's impressive. That's great, and I do hope you make it to number one someday soon.
Yes, we that's our goal. Actually, we think that we have good, you know, technology that is good enough to be a clear alternative to Microsoft SharePoint. You know, an alternative that is open source. SharePoint is great. They do a good job, but that's Microsoft technology, and it's not open source. We do as great in terms of features. The technology is open source, and we think that we can not compete against Microsoft because, you know, they are extremely powerful and big. But we can be an alternative to Microsoft, and that's what we shoot for. I think this is doable, and we have not done any marketing in the past, but now we are looking at different possibilities, so, you know, to spread the word, so people hear about Metadot, they start to use it more. But today, you know, 90% of our leads really come from Google.
Well, you know what, if that's what you're getting now from just people coming to you, I can only imagine what's going to happen when you actually start going out and marketing this. You had mentioned other portal service companies getting into portal services, Microsoft, Novell, IBM. Have any of you know, the bigger companies approached you about maybe including your software with their products or bundling them with their services?
Yes, we had some discussions with some companies, not the big guys, because the big guys, they focus on enterprise technology, and LAMP has not been an enterprise-blessed technology. It's becoming there, you know, it's coming there, it's getting there, but it's not yet there. So enterprise technology means Java, means Oracle, and that kind of technology. LAMP is not there. We know it's getting there, and IBM has recently invested a lot of millions of dollars in LAMP. They bless the technology, and just that fact, you know, that they are doing that, shows that LAMP is the right way to go. It's one of the right way to go. You know, it's not the only way, but it's the right way to go. And I think that's going to be good for us very soon. Big companies will want to have a LAMP alternative. Java is great, but it's complex. It's heavy. It requires lots of expensive Java programmers. LAMP is, you know, it's an immediate answer to a lot of different problems that corporations have.
So, I mean, what is it? Just that LAMP needs some bigger gorillas behind it, like IBM, to get it pushed out into the corporations. I mean, you've obviously been using it successfully for over 5 years now, and it's been very stable, and we hear more and more success stories every year. So is that what companies are looking for? Somebody well-known and big to step out into the limelight and say, yes, this is ready for the enterprise?
That's one of the components, I think, that will help. And something that is also needed is, you know, good tools for software management. So PHP, Perl, and Python, which is the P of LAMP, they need to have more tools for software management, software testing. You know, like Perl has fantastic tools to do automated testing. And we've been using that a lot. And that usually is only required, you know, that is required by Fortune 500 companies. If you want to roll out software, you need to have good tools to manage software. It's still lacking on PHP, even though PHP 5 is getting there. So IBM will help move that faster, and all big companies, they will help to move that faster. When big companies, you know, they don't like to take risks, like Schlumberger, where I was, or other companies, you know, as big, they want stable technology, and they want to be able to call their IT providers to support it. If nobody supports PHP or Perl, you know, they are not going to use it. If IBM says, yes, I do support LAMP, if you want that I support your 400 databases, I can do that. They will start using it, because the cost of development of a LAMP application is probably 10 times less than the cost of a Java application or a cost of a .NET application, because it's extremely fast to develop.
All right. Well, Daniel, I want to thank you for, you know...
Should we try the Emacs or VI?
We're getting there. Hold on. I want to thank you for talking about your company. We got a couple of questions that we ask every guest that comes
everybody
on.
Everybody gets these.
So if you wouldn't mind answering these. Do you use Linux at home, too, personally? Is that your main operating system, or...?
Well, I have 5 computers at home, and 2 of them have Linux. I use them as servers for pictures, and it's a media, you know, media player, MP3 players, servers, and I stream around the house, and I have laptops with iTunes to listen to music, and I stream that to my stereo system with some wireless networks. So I do use Linux, but on the desktop, I need a lot of business applications. Microsoft Office has still no equivalent, and I need to use that on an everyday, you know, at work every day. So I connect through an X-Window interface to my Linux server, and I develop there. For the Office, it's more, you know, Microsoft-based.
Right. So then you're obviously, I think you were saying at home you use Debian then, right, because that's what you use at work?
Yes.
And do you have a preferred window manager or desktop environment?
Yes, this is KDE for us. We like KDE a lot.
Ah, KDE. Now, are you VI or Emacs?
I'm an Emacs guy.
Emacs, all right. So is your wife going back to France this summer again?
Yes, she does. Yeah, she will go back to France, and I need to find the next little application that I will put on top of Metadata that will make Metadata the number one on Google.
So that's what we have. We have your wife to thank for going off to France every summer and then leaving you the opportunity to develop all this wonderful new stuff.
Exactly. I tell her that.
All right. So, Daniel, I want to thank you for coming on the show again. And I look forward. I want to take Metadata for a spin at work, because I work for a school district, and it looks like it'd be something that might augment our current website.
Yes, absolutely. School district has been a big big fan. You know, they've been big fans of Metadata, and probably 50% of the user base is our schools.
All right. Well, thank you very much, and for taking the time out of your busy schedule to talk with us. We're going to close off the interview right now. And is there anything else you'd like to say to the rest of the world?
I just want to thank you for your time, and I wish you a good evening.
And a good evening to you too, Daniel. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. We'll close things down there for a little bit on the Skype line. I really enjoyed talking with him. It was very interesting to see an actual company that has really been successful with the open source or the GPL ideology. What?
I don't know. He's hit what I should say.
What?
No, listening to him talk remind me of a certain movie.
What does that have to do with his company?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
No, I just think it was... I think it's
Pat's off in another
his
world
product,
right now.
I'm looking at it, and I'm like, wow, I mean, it's pretty impressive to me. So definitely give Metadata a look for if you're looking for a portal server. But it's good to see that, you know, there's actually success happening in a service model.
Speaking of service models, your friend Andy's buddies down in Savannah, Georgia, the open store, remember we talked to them a few months ago? Well, they closed shop because they weren't turning a profit, basically.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I went to their website today, and I saw it.
Did he say that on the chat, too? Because he's on the chat.
No, I haven't even... I'm not looking at the chat.
Oh, well, you...
I went to the Open Store website, and I noticed that they said they're closed down.
That's a shame.
Yeah, that is a shame. Bottom line is, you know, you run a business, you got to make a profit.
Well, yeah, it's true. Well, maybe we can get from the horse's mouth in a few minutes what actually happened. But that was Metadot. All right, on to some other stuff. This week, Slackware has left my desktops. Not 100% left. I mean, I do have the server running Slackware. But I ran, I installed Sarge on my main workstation, dual booting with Slackware. Because I just wanted to check it out. I mean, I'm always hearing how everybody's hyping Debian. And I had to, you know, try it out for myself. In the past, it was about 3 or 4 years ago, I tried Debian on my systems. It was, whoa, it was back in the potato days. But I think I actually tried it.
One release ago?
Yeah, one release ago. it was potato. I wasn't that impressed with it. I mean, I wasn't. Now, since then, of course, I've gone down the route of playing around with Nopix, Ubuntu, you know, which are Debian derivatives. I didn't go so far as to go with Mepis or Sandros, Linspire yet, or try those out. But when I did my install of Debian, I didn't have high expectations. But I was actually blown away. I didn't realize. Now, I have Ubuntu right here running on PPC. I didn't realize how close Sarge is with Ubuntu.
I have a revelation, too. I got rid of my Slackware box and I put Debian on it. I'm going to start up my blog. It's pretty much done. It's almost ready to roll out.
Now, what did you do, Debian? What version?
I did the same one as you.
Sarge.
I did the net install. You know, it puts the base system down, and then it goes out and starts pulling down everything else that you want.
Yeah, it takes about, what, an hour and a half? A
couple hours.
Yeah, an hour. It took me about an hour and a half to do that. You know, base install from the CD, and then downloaded the packages, installed it. I was really impressed with. I got my system basically back up to where I had it with Slackware in a few hours.
Now, you're running the 2.4 kernel?
Or no, I'm running 2.6. 2.6.7. Which, that's an interesting thing I'm going to bring up in a minute. This thing, if I'm not mistaken, dropped down to 2.6 by default when I installed it.
You see, when I did mine, it went to the 2.4 whatever they plug, which is okay because I'm running a web server on it.
So. Right. Well, I'm going to come back to that in just a second, but what I want to say is, one of the hardest things I had was really complicated, was get the Debian NVIDIA drivers on there on package. I had to do some really funky stuff. I went and I got the Debian kernel sources, Debian kernel headers. When you extract them, it gives you the plain vanilla kernel, but then you also need to get the Debian patches if you want to get, you know, recompile your kernel or get a kernel similar to one you have. Patches, man, there's a whole lot of them.
They do a lot of patching, Debian.
A lot of patches manually. There's a script in there. I couldn't get it to run. Now, this is all going based on my knowledge of Slackware and not doing any... What? And not doing any... how could we...
Agreed.
Oh, it's just Link. It must be Link. We had a thing come in from Link. How come he couldn't hear us? But we are, as far as I know,
we're still streaming.
Up everywhere else, yeah. We are still streaming. Anyway, I apologize. I don't know what stream he's using.
Alan's going through them now to see what the deal is.
All right, so we'll keep going. I have not done any use of any documentation or anything really with Debian, just going. So, you know, I was reading through the NVIDIA how-to. So anyway, I just said, to heck with it. I'm going to install the latest kernel myself and compile it. I had no problems doing that. It was real simple. Basically, everything I did apt-get for, except for mPlayer and mPlayer plugin, I compiled that manually.
It's great apt-get, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh,
so
you know, I was like, man, if I keep using apt-get, I'm not going to be able to compile anymore. And I was like, well...
Get lazy.
Yeah. If I'm not going to compile anymore, I should actually spend more time using the software.
Yeah, that's the idea.
So, and what I loved was, I was like, okay, I want to get Kino. So I apt-get drop-down Kino. And, you know, what I will add, having used Slackware exclusively for like 3 or 4 years, if I have a problem in Debian, I pretty much know what to do. Kino, for example, when I popped in the camera, it wouldn't pull the video off of there because there was no what is it, RAW 1394 device. So I had to create that, and that was pretty easy to create.
You know, talking about RAW 1394, Debian is the one distro where it's the easiest to get that up and running. Every other distro, you got to do a full kernel compile to get that in there.
Yeah, I had no problem with Debian. And I got Kino, so then I was like, well, I wonder how easy it's going to be to get Cinelera on here. I found a repository for Cinelera. I dropped it on there, and in a few minutes I was like, holy crap, I can actually import video now. And I have all these wonderful transitions. Yeah, I'm like, wow. I'm like sitting there playing around with the transitions, with the filters, with all sorts of stuff.
You're not beating your head against the wall like you usually
do. Yeah, I'm like, damn, this is great. I was so impressed with it. I started off with GNOME. I never pulled up KDE on that one yet. I went right to XFCE. That looked fine. I went right to Fluxbox afterwards, set it up the way I had it before. One of the nice things was all the menus were populated the way they should be.
Right.
That was really great.
Anytime you do a package install, they have, you know, requirements on how you do your packages. You'll get the entry on your menus. You know, it's all automatic.
Right.
You know, Debian was my main distro going back maybe 2 years ago. For almost a year, and the machine died on me. You know, the hard drive was completely fragged. I went back to Slackware at that point. But like I said, I'm going to be running my web server with Debian.
Right.
And I got Apache up and running pretty quick. And everything's ready to go. The only thing that's funky on my blog is I'm using WordPress. It seems when I access the website externally over the web, it seems that the cascading style sheets aren't importing properly. Huh. I think it's a permissions issue. I got to go through it. But once I get that resolved, I'm going to post, you know, the link.
Oh, yeah. We're looking forward to that.
Yeah. I figured, you know, let me try, you know, maintaining the server in my house and do everything from there. I could have went, you know, just, you know, like how Alan did it, where, you just set it up on directory on your server. I said, screw it. Let me try setting up the server and maintain it.
Yeah, for my once-a-month post.
Yeah, for your once-a-month post. I'm going to try to do it at least once or twice a week.
Yeah, I tried that too, and then I decided my life was so boring I didn't want to write about it.
Not to take you off track, but...
Oh, no. So some of the questions were, you know, Rigney says, does Debian have everything you want or need downloadable via apt-get? Pretty much so far.
There's like 8,000 packages or something like that?
There's tons of packages.
Yeah, there's a lot.
DVD. I have a DVD player here. I have a DVD player in the laptop. I actually grabbed Video LAN Client. Was such an easy download with apt-get as compared to Slackware side. You have to compile all sorts of packages. Real easy. Dropped it on there. I was watching DVDs in a matter of seconds.
Speaking of apt-get. Video LAN client, you know, I'm stuck at work with Windows boxes, so I installed the Windows version of that to watch the videos that we did. And it looks like Alan is number one. If you go to the uploads, you know.
I haven't even looked at it yet.
He's the most popular video.
It was up 140
downloads.
Alan.
Everyone's curious about Alan, you know.
And it was all Patrick's IP addresses, too.
Yes. Why, thank you.
More downloads.
Yeah, but, I mean, you had... you still
sure
have
that
issue
is.
With free, non-free. You just add the non-free. There's some stuff, like Cinelera, I think even MPlayer, you're not going to be able to get out of some of those repositories. Other people have Debian repositories.
You get the packages, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was, like I said, it was real easy to get me back up to where I was. Editing video, importing video... I could actually, like I said, now start editing, playing DVDs, playing games. I mean, getting games. There's tons of games out there to pull down and play with. You know, everything I wanted. I then went yesterday. My laptop that my wife uses has been freezing up an awful lot. And I thought it was because of a heat issue. I wasn't sure. It could have been when I had to replace the entire innards of it. Took it apart and put it in a new machine. Something could have happened during that process, which corrupted, you know, anything.
How difficult was that to replace all the guts on the laptop? I wanted to ask you.
It was a lot easier than I thought it was going to be. Because 15-20 minute job.
I've been looking around for laptops, and I found a couple of websites where companies will sell you laptops with no OS on it, or they'll sell you the kit, which is basically the same laptops that, say, Sony or Dell sells to you.
Right.
But you got to slap in a processor, you know, a hard drive, and that's it. Everything else is in there.
Well, I bought, when the Dell broke, the whatever that is. It's not a Dell. I'm sorry. It's a Gateway. I found the chassis, I guess is what they call it. It had everything with it, except for the hard drive memory
and the processor.
And the processor.
Yeah, that's it.
And the keyboard was another thing that wasn't with it. So right. Basically what I did is I pulled those things out of the one that was broken and moved it over. Now, what was nice, though, with doing that is all I had to do, was pop off this little bezel on the front, unscrew the keyboard. Everything was right underneath the keyboard. Take it out of the old one. See, I started by taking the old one and disassembling it. So if you ever disassembled a laptop, it's a nightmare.
Put it back.
Oh, my God. The little screws.
The little screws.
Those
you can
tiny
never find.
Screws, there's 5,000 of them, and then there's like three different sizes.
You always wind up with extra pieces that you don't know where they go.
Yeah. My theory is if you put it back together and you have a couple pieces left over and the damn thing runs, works. You did a good job. Right? But, it was a nightmare. But it was really easy, putting it back together.
I'm going to investigate that a little further, see how difficult that is to do. Because if it's not that hard, you can probably get a same machine that, say, Sony sells for $2,000 for, like, $1,200 if you do it right.
Right. I mean, if you can go through that process. As long as it doesn't come, like, completely disassembled, like a model. You have to pull out, punch it out of plastic, grind the sides down. Get there with the
good
rubber
times,
cement,
man.
Glue it back in, yeah.
Where were your kids?
Putting decals on the side.
We used to build those models and we'd blow them up.
No, we never went that far, Blue.
We were pretty bad.
But I put... okay, back to the Debian. I popped it into laptop. What surprised me is this time I didn't get a 2.6 kernel. I got a 2.4 like you did.
Yeah, I got the 2.4.
I had some issues with setting up X for the proper display because I didn't know what my... It's been a long time since I actually had to really go in and mess around with the LCD, the actual horizontal and vertical settings for my device. It's just really
that's
odd.
The only thing that's really kludgy that they really haven't improved on is the X configuration.
Right, because most of the time it just works out of the box.
Yeah,
Yeah, and this one I had to actually go in and kind of guess. But I got that running. And once that was the big hurdle I had to go through after that, it was pretty much standard-based.
It's easy. It's not hard at all.
Dropped everything in and recompiled MPlayer and MPlayer plugin. And I was watching DVDs and QuickTime videos off the web and watching porn. Got to test
get
it with something.
The important stuff.
Yeah, it's like, oh, man, I don't know. What am I going to test? Well, I got a porn DVD over there in the closet. I'll just pull that out and test it and see if it works.
Jenna Jameson, right?
Yeah, I don't have any Jenna Jameson. Look at Pat over here dropping names. Like, woo, Jenny Jameson. But I two thumbs up for Debian.
The tech show remote from Irv's.
Yes.
What were you going to say?
So do you have any more Slackware boxes still running or no?
That's dual boost Slackware. Now, I'm not comfortable yet with going to Debian on the server side.
See, that's what I'm running.
You went the opposite of what I did. I'm very happy with Slackware over here. I feel like I've betrayed Slackware.
I don't have any Slack running.
I feel
bad.
So like I love Slackware so much. I feel like I've betrayed it. I feel a little sad. I love, but man, it's just such a sweet.
What would Patrick say?
Yeah, sweet. It's been a great run, Debian. I'm waiting for it. I'm waiting and hoping it blows up in some way. Like when I have to do the update, when they move Sid down, and
the only thing that
Sarge becomes Eck or whatever it is, Etch, I think it is, ECH. Oh, what?
The only thing you got to watch out for is if you do kernel compiles, is stick with what they have in their repositories. Don't download vanilla kernels.
I did a vanilla kernel.
Did,
I had no
okay.
problem.
Yeah.
I did come out the vanilla kernel. The first time I ever made an initrd image to go with it, it was real easy, and I just got to apply some patches to it. But I honestly thought I was going to have a problem too with vanilla kernel. What is it? 2.6.11.10 is what I grabbed, and actually I grabbed 9 because 10 came out yesterday, and I recompiled.
How do you like it at the very end where you have to create a Debian package and you install that?
I didn't do that.
You didn't do that? No,
I did not do that.
That's how it used to be when I had it on there.
You can do that, but I didn't do that. There's no reason to do that. No reason for me to do that.
Right.
I mean, it was pretty easy. I like Debian better than Ubuntu. My reason why is I think Ubuntu's great, and it does a fantastic job, and it does a really great job with integration. I don't really like all that integration, personally. Debian has enough integration for me that I can actually go in and customize stuff to my liking. With Ubuntu, it was a little more difficult to do that.
The thing that turns me off about Ubuntu is that ugly brown theme.
You could retheme it, I guess.
I guess you can change the background.
I think Ubuntu's great. I prefer Debian. That's just me. Both, you can't go wrong. Debian, Ubuntu, Slackware. Personally, I think you can't go wrong with any of those.
I'm running Debian, Fedora, and Mepis. That's what I'm running right now.
Mepis.
It's Mepis. Nice.
You read? Were you the one who posted that thing about Mepis, about the guy selling Mepis CDs on eBay?
No, on the mailing list. No, that was somebody else.
But it was on Linux Questions forum.
Yeah.
And
some guy posted this on Linux Questions where he was selling CDs of Mepis, and he got a nasty email from somebody saying, stop doing this. And there was a whole
stuff selling we can get for free.
It's GPL, man. You can turn around and sell, as long as you're not, making a killing on it. Not everybody has broadband and they can't download, CDs. I mean, me or you, we have a cable modem or a DSL. I download ISOs like crazy. You couldn't do that with a dial up.
It's over there.
Somebody just. All right, that's good. It's done ringing. Yeah, you're right.
What's the big deal? People sell CDs like on eBay and stuff. What's the big deal?
You have to take that up with the Mepis people.
I guess so. And there was also a falling out. Supposedly there was a website where these guys were doing packages for certain applications for Mepis, and they had a falling out with Warren, and basically the whole group that was doing it said, "We don't want to do it anymore." That I posted on the forum. There was an article I posted.
I'll have to double check that because I didn't read that article yet. So falling out. So all's not well in the Mepis community.
Sounds like there's a little friction going on.
Speaking of what was on the forum, we got a feedback on the forum from I think it's Jedediah, I guess is how you would pronounce it. It would be similar to Jebediah, but Jedediah, about our Windows crash episode that was April 1st.
He didn't like it.
Yeah, he wasn't too happy with it and thought we expressed a lot of misconceptions and ignorance towards Windows.
And that was the whole reason.
Yeah, it was an April Fool's joke, and it was supposed to be an April Fool's episode. Just
a little over the top,
around.
But, what the fuck?
A lot of it was exaggerated. Obviously, Jedediah actually has success running Windows in just about every environment he's ever worked
Good
with.
Good for him. God bless
you. More power to him because if I have to touch a Windows box in a day, I'm so bummed out. That's just me personally. And I just try and stay away from it. I'm so thankful that I do most of my work in other operating systems. Because I hate it. I hate it!
Unfortunately, I have to see it every day.
Me too. My desktop at work is Windows, and I don't care for it.
And if you heard a Windows ping or something similar to that in last week's show, I don't know where that came from, but it couldn't have been from here.
Nobody's running Windows here.
Yeah, nobody has. There's no Microsoft at all in this room. In this house.
Even on the laptops that we bring in during the show, no Windows.
Now, Alan is an avid Microsoft user.
He's got Windows 98
I don't
there.
Think so.
Well,
although I will admit to having their XP is on this laptop, but it very rarely ever gets put on. Once a month to put the updates on.
Yeah.
Turn it back off again.
Linksifer is not here to talk about his RSS aggregator success stories that he's had the past week, so screw him. I want to make a mention of an RSS aggregator that I was turned on to yesterday called Liferea, Liferea. It is a standalone aggregator, runs GTK. And it's kind of like set up like Thunderbird is to start. You got your left side menu with all your feeds. And then when you click on a feed, it opens up a list of the different posts to that blog or news site or whatever. You click on one of those, it opens it up in the bottom feed where you see like your mail. It does a really good job, I thought, of displaying the feed. It'll actually use GTK HTML to lay out the page as if it were on the person's own blog site. So if you have images or whatever in that blog posting, it'll show the images. Some sites, like ads or whatever, might come through, or sometimes the site doesn't really look that well. It looks like the site without the color and the ads, like the register, didn't look like exactly like the register, but you can still see the content perfectly. It offers you the capability of opening the post in a tab within LifeRea or in your browser, preferred browser application. So if you're looking at just the standard post to the that the person has written, you can't reply to it, but if you open it up in a tab, it uses GTK HTML, and it provides like a almost perfect view of it most of the time. Some CSS kind of falls apart in it, but for the most part, you get a good view. You could actually respond to it or put a comment in there through LifeRea, or you can open it up in your preferred web browser.
Cool.
Yeah, it was a really interesting application. It's still being worked on. It supports enclosures. So if you could actually download, if you had a podcast feed, you could download the podcast feed to enclosures.
Yeah.
So it looks to be coming along very well. My only downside of it is it's not portable for me. It's not something that, you know, if I use an online aggregator, I can check it from anywhere I want. I use Thunderbird as my main aggregator right now because I run my mail server. I use IMAP, and I can put my folders and subdirectories for my aggregator in my IMAP directories, and I share it wherever I go. So when I go to work, I pull up Thunderbird. I see all my feeds in there. I have it running here all the time, so it's constantly, you know, checking every 60 minutes or so. And if there's something new, I can see the posting in there from work.
I'm not that crazy, so.
Yeah.
I'm not that neurotic.
You're not that anal, huh?
No.
I got to know when Link posts something.
Alan made a post. I'm there.
Yeah, well, you know what? If I want to check Alan's blog, I just come by every other month.
Beginning of the month.
Maybe there's a post. And speaking of aggregators and enclosures, if you listen, the actual episode of Escape Radio from Matthew Bischoff was released this week, a new one. It's the first one I've heard in a long time. And, man, he was talking about all the great, he was talking about podcasting was the main theme and talking about podcast clients. He did not mention Bash Potter.
Really?
I didn't hear that. Yes.
Oh, we're going to have to call him.
Link is going to be happy.
Yeah,
Link's going to call him next week and find out why.
Say, whoa, did not mention Bash Potter. So in your face, Link. Yeah. Too bad Link's not here to defend himself. Pat, we have time for your last topic that you wanted to bring up. You forgot what it was, didn't you?
I remember. We were talking about the possibility that Red Hat might be bought by Microsoft. Some people have been talking about this. Doc Searls has been mentioning it, and a couple other people. And supposedly there was a meeting with one of the guys from Red Hat, and it's Ballmer.
Guy from Dell, right?
No.
That was investing money.
That was one story. The other story was that Michael Dell invested $100 million into Red Hat. But then a few days later, he retracted that, saying that he didn't know about it, that was his investment company, and they were just hedging bets in different areas. To me, it sounds like he's full of shit. That's what I think.
Well, that whole Steve Ballmer sat down with
Zulzak, what's his name?
The CEO of Red Hat.
Matt Zulzak.
Oh, man, now I'm drawing a blank on the guy's name. Somebody from the chat, refresh our memory. Anyway, I've heard a lot of different things going back and forth. With, you know, people are saying, no, there's no way Microsoft would buy Red Hat. Oh, it would be.
I don't think Red Hat would want to be bought by them.
Well,
unless they throw so much mad money at them, you know?
I think, you know, after reading a lot of stuff, you know, my opinion about it is if Microsoft were to go and buy Red Hat, that would kind of negate all of their, that would be a total reversal of what they've been saying all along. Now, and what they've said, if you actually watch their propaganda, first, you know, of course, they ignored it. They said, no, it's nothing. It's not good. Then they tried going down the route of saying,
it's more expensive.
It's, you know, it's not as stable. It's more expensive. Get the facts. And none of that actually worked. They badmouthed it. They said, Windows is better. Nothing has actually worked.
They ignore you, they fight you, and then you win.
Right.
Like that.
With their new, what I'm seeing is their new ad campaign is now they're really focusing on a world of devices and software that run under Windows. So they're really focusing on the fact that, yeah, they've monopolized the market. They have all the big support right now, all the big applications are going to run on Windows. It's changing, but that's what they're looks like they're pushing
Windows
now.
Windows Media Center's really taken off.
Into what, the toilet?
Yeah. So Windows Media Center has become the Xbox 360 now.
Right, yeah. Xbox.
That's pretty much it. It seems that what they've done with the Xbox is they've thrown in all the features that people have hacked into it, you know, make it like a media player and all these other things for like their pictures and everything. You know, basically all those people that hacked them, they did the market research for Microsoft.
Right.
It'll run Linux, don't worry.
So yeah, will Microsoft buy Red Hat?
I don't think so.
I don't think that'll happen. I think there would be a lot of eyebrows raised if such a thing would go on, particularly with antitrust.
But on the flip side, did anybody say Novell was going to buy SUSE?
Yeah, but you're looking at two different.
Yeah, it's not that much of a stretch.
Companies. Now, if you read Ian Murdoch, I keep an eye on his blog, and I think he brought up a good point on there. What would be more likely, and he probably referenced other people, and I'm forgetting them right now, to happen would be Microsoft and Red Hat maybe entering into some kind of partnership,
yeah.
Particularly with Windows management, their new management, what's it called, MOM?
Some kind of Linux tools.
Microsoft management.
Red Hat Longhorn.
would be able to use Microsoft's management utilities to, in a sense, administer or
integrate
manage
the environment.
Yeah, Red Hat Linux. And it would be, in a sense, a boost for Red Hat if that were to happen. The concern is, well,
what kind of
would
backlash
that,
would they be?
Well, right. What else would that lock you into just specifically Red Hat for those capabilities? What about all the other distributions?
Yeah.
That's, you know,
plus
question that's raised.
You know, the backlash. What are people going to think, you know? Those bastards are in bed with them, you know?
But, you know, hey.
It's a business, you know?
Microsoft is starting to warm up a little more to, you know, open source and different things. They're making.
Well, they need some new ideas, you know?
Into the community.
They can only steal so much from Apple. It's time to, you know,
right.
Use Linux as a model to steal from.
So they're going into that phase now that they're actually, you know, trying to get in and get in there. Because they know no matter all that FUD they put out is not working. And they can't really, in the long run, I think, compete successfully against it.
We got to get a pool of when Longhorn is actually released. We'll get, like, you know, a bunch of people, everybody put, say, $5-$10 in, and whoever hits it will win it.
Add a year to whenever they say it's going to be out.
It's supposed to be out next year, isn't it?
Yeah, they're saying next year.
Another year. There you go.
Who knows?
I ain't holding my breath.
But it's just, that's the way it is. You know, we know what you are holding. Yeah. All right.
That's special.
We got 3 minutes left to fill up. Alan, you've been pretty silent for a little while now because I know that you're messing with your Windows machine. What website were you on that was crashing that laptop?
Oh, it was a website. There's a newsletter out. I've subscribed because at work I use Windows all the time, so it basically tells you all the latest viruses are coming out. It's a Woody's Window Watch or something like that. And I had an interesting article from that I was going to talk about tonight. And, of course, I sent it to the wrong email address. So I was going to see if I could get the archive from it. And every time I went to the archive site, and I don't even want to go here because I'll hang the whole machine up, it was actually crashing the Linux box. I don't know what the hell it was doing, but all of a sudden my box would freeze and the cap light and the number light would start flashing at me. So I'm not even going to go there, but it was like the second one. If you Google Windows Woody's Window Watch on it, it's like the second one down there that was like crashing my machine. I'll have to try it from work and see if I can crash it there.
Sounds like a plan, Alan.
Well, I don't know. I forget what
can I bring down the Unix box?
What virus is going around now? Because I mean, I should pay more attention to this for work. But apparently, there's one that, you know, if it gets on your system, your antivirus isn't going to detect it. Is it one of the SOBR versions?
So, yeah.
That it won't detect it and they can't remove it, but you have to get special utilities that hasn't been incorporated into
it. Format. Format C.
Fantastic.
No. F-disk remove partition.
Yeah. So, yeah. That's great. That is great.
So next week we might be talking to Michael Robertson or Kevin Carmody, who was on Lug Radio last episode. So.
Yeah, we worked that out. And then after that, we don't have any interviews for a little while. We can go back to having some relaxing bitch sessions. And Alan's going to go on his long diatribes again. And
looking forward to it.
Pat will get drunk, and I'll fart.
I always get drunk.
Yeah. You haven't brought beer around in a while. What happened?
You know, I'm saving it for the Weibacher brewery tour.
Oh, brewery tour.
I got an email from them this week.
When are we doing that? Yeah.
And they do it every Saturday from 12 to 3. They usually take groups between 10 to 20 people per clip, and they go around, and at the end they have tasting. And they sell these barrels, little mini barrels, where you can fill up with your favorite Weibacher brew. So
cool.
I'm game. Anytime you guys want to do it, let's do it.
Because that's just around the corner for me. It's
me too. I'm just outside of Easton.
Yeah, it's over on Line Street.
It's free, so let's do it. The only thing that we should do is probably plan somebody to drive. I don't want to be causing accidents and killing people. Because, you know, we're all happy.
Come on, it's located right by a graveyard.
Is it?
Yeah, it's not too far
away. I don't
know
where it is. I've never seen the actual place.
I think it's over on Line Street, if it's the same place I'm thinking.
The graveyard off the hill there?
There's one off there, yeah.
I think I know where it is.
I used to live over by there.
Wrap up your little speeches.
So we'll post the Weibacher tour information so people from the Lug, and if anybody wants to come join us, we'll go on the brewery tour and get hammered.
I'm not hammered.
We'll do Alan? What do they call that?
Hey, thanks for listening tonight.
Good night.
Oh, that's it?
Well, I don't know. You were like pushing us all off, so I thought it was time to go.
It's over. We're cut off on BinRev. So, yeah, thanks for listening, everybody, so that everybody else who's not on the is on BinRev doesn't get upset because we actually continue
the bonus episode.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you very much. I'm just trying to find some music to play on the way out. Have a great week. Continue Linuxing, and we are out of here until next week.
Ciao, baby.
Peace out. Got nothing else to play.
We have to get some emergency movie.
I got some music.